The Shaggy Jenkins Show.
We have to make Russia great again.
On the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to another fun-filled, oh God, who am I kidding? The world's only getting worse and we're just watching it burn. Coming up today, we'll talk about Trump and his credibility warning to others. Believe it or not, it's not about himself. We'll also talk a little bit about Obamacare, Buttigieg, and why not? We'll throw in some Jussie Smollett and, well, end up with some maybe Joe Biden news that everybody will like. Before we get to that, some brief introductions are in line. Hi, welcome to my show. My name is Shaggy Jenkins. I'm a critical thinker, problem solver, guy just left of normal and sane, but always centered in common sense and found online at ShaggyJenkins.com, this fine program wherever podcasting and radio shows are served, and, of course, on social media at Shaggy Live. Be warned, sometimes I put some crazy stuff on there. One guy that is known from social media and radio himself comes to us from the Windy City. He has been everything from a political pundit to the guy that just kind of set side saddle to legends like Lee Michaels. Information headquarters himself, please give it up for Chris Bass.
You have overcome, for I am here. And Shaggy, look, the wells run dry. I can't pay you anymore for any type of good announcements and setups. But right now, I guess it's for free, so I'll take it. And it's always good to see you, my brother. How you doing?
Man, I tell you, this has been, just in a word, chaotic week.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And, you know, here's the thing that I kind of wanted to start us off with, because, you know, we always talk like, and here's the funny thing. For people that that actually catch us on social media, you know, that at Shaggy Live thing and on Facebook at Facebook.com/ShaggyJenkinsShow. You probably heard us talking before the show, and we usually talk about pretty lighthearted things. And the reason why is because our first story has to deal with something I never thought that I would say. Chris, Donald Trump seems to think that reporters, at least this week, in the aftermath of Mueller's findings being released, which let's just go ahead and say those were questionable. With all of this stuff that's coming out, Donald Trump, can you believe this, thinks that news media should listen to him about who is a credible person to talk to about his administration.
Well, Shaggy and others listening and watching this, though, we should not be surprised of the president's actions. No, he is a very paranoid individual, very paranoid. Even Scarface, he was saying, you know, why you have the gun, well, you have the gun in your hand. I'm paranoid. So he's paranoid. And that's how he operates, in that type of modus operandi. And the fact that he sent memos off to MSNBC, CNN, and NBC, for example, these were the same outlets he denounced anyway. And, of course, he's used the media as the enemy of the people, once in those very strong and harsh words can be taken to any type of mindset to make them anti-human. And we've seen the situation before. Have we seen the story of the BBC reporter trying to do his job reporting Trump, and he almost had his life threatened by a person who was in the audience. So again, we use words like enemy of the people and, you know, fake news and stuff like that. I mean, fake news probably get away with it to some degree, but enemy of the people is very strong. And it's not fair to people in media try to do their jobs. So go back to 45, who uses this platform to say, you know what? I'm going to tell you how to operate your business. I'm going to tell you what guests to get, because he wants it to also be about him. Let me establish that from day one. What he fails to realize is that there are more other pressing events in the world besides him and how people relate to him from the standpoint of media, because he still thinks in the mind that he's part of the media from the perspective of being a reality star and a media star. So it's not from a platform of being a president and the platform of being a celebrity.
Yeah, because when we talk about his celebrity-ism as far as, well, the brand of Donald Trump, that brand has been severely tarnished over the last couple of years, thanks to not only the ongoing Mueller investigation, but Trump's own public statements and contradictions that he's made with foreign policy statements in front of others versus what he then goes back and does on Twitter. We just had a Another example with the whole reversal of the North Korean sanctions that now the State Department is trying to say, well, he didn't really tweet something that is actionable, so we're going to keep the sanctions on, but maybe we're not. I mean, it's this whole weird dance with Trump, and it always has been. So now, if I'm just the casual person, okay, not the person that is deeply ensconced into Trump land, neither am I the one deeply ensconced in the left-wing liberal dream or whatever the GOP wants to call it. Neither one of those, just as a sensible person. If I'm looking at this guy and all of a sudden he starts telling me who should be trustworthy and believable and I know his track record, Chris, what do you think I'm going to think?
Well, you're not going to trust the track record of Trump. You know, if you use the type of sense, the thing about it is you always got to consider the source of where it's coming from. People have been leaning in various polls that they don't really trust the president, and rightfully so, because he has shown patterns of behavior that dictate that. You know, when you're constantly going on about there's no collusion, and they were jumping up and down after the Mueller report about the whole thing, even Kellyanne Conway and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you know, were out there, you know, having a little gal pal party at the White House lawn, and they were getting giddy about that. But still remains, you have a person who is still going through all types of indictments and investigations. I mean, that, of course, is very major, but consider the source of who this man is. And I think people who probably believed in Trump at one point, not the hardcore ones. The hardcore ones, look, he could do all types of wrong. It doesn't matter with them. But I think the people who voted for Trump because they were anti-Hillary are not coming around and seeing that what happened with the shutdown of the government and how he is when he's with the media and the press, they're coming around a little bit saying, I don't know if I can trust this man.
Yeah, because, you know, we'll talk about this guy in just a little bit, but Pete Buttigieg, you know him. He's the one from Indianapolis right now on the left that is kind of miraculously making some waves. But one of the statements that he said about this whole situation is that has been primarily everyone's problem, especially the media and the Democratic Party when it comes to Donald Trump. We present him as being all bad. What we don't present is the other side of that. What is the thing that we can offer in contradiction to? What is the thing that we can do that says, no, all of this craziness can actually be balanced out by something? Democrats only, and the media, for the longest time, let's just keep it real here, we've only attacked Donald Trump as being bad, yet we've not talked about who else is doing good and what impact that good has for the longest time. So with this credibility thing that Trump is now pulling out of his hat, it seems like he wants to keep up his side of the narrative so that this other narrative I just mentioned can never take foot before the 2020 election. What do you think?
No, I think that's right. I think anytime that you're able to get in ahead of a story and control it, then it just works out for your benefit. I think a lot of people would agree to that. When you're trying to change the narrative for your benefit, when you're trying to even change the narrative of your enemies for benefit, and when you're trying to put onus on someone else across from you or the spotlight, it has to be done very carefully. Because if you're not careful, that same onus and spotlight will be on you. It's a very intimate dance these people do. But I think, again, we talk about control factors and how people can be either led astray or brought into a certain fold of a certain mentality. That has to be done. That's been has to a certain gravitas, a certain presentation in the whole thing. And that's what we're seeing here, I believe.
Yeah, because when it comes to Donald Trump and his whole attack on who should be in front of the media, in front of the American people, I'm gonna backtrack a theory that I've had for the longest time. Are you ready, Chris?
Sure.
This theory is, and I believe I've brought it up to you exactly 4 times on this program over the past couple of, years that we've known each other. Here's the thing. In 2015, Donald Trump seemed to be gearing himself up for an election loss. But an election loss, like described in a couple of books, including even Fire and Fury, as one of the greatest infomercials of all time. Remember Cohen's testimony? Yeah. But that infomercial, what was it for? A lot of people just assumed, well, it would be the infomercial for, you know, the Donald Trump and Trump Enterprise master brand. Everything. Real estate, whatever. QP dolls, whatever Donald Trump wants to endorse. You know, before Shaquille O'Neal was announced as the king of endorsements, it was Donald Trump, and all the products were pretty bad.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay, but moving on here. The thing is that when Donald Trump was in that position of trying to run one of the greatest infomercials in United States history, the thing that I think that he was gearing up for, and several other people that have been guests and callers into this program, back when we even had callers, was that Donald Trump always intended for a media empire to his wing. Something that kind of went along the lines of a Fox News, but into Trump's pockets. Now, during his presidency, it's no wonder that he's found himself married to a Fox News. But now, trying to take dictates out, or, you know, trying to dictate out to the rest of the free and open media of the United States as he's doing. Chris, I gotta ask, does this behavior still point to a guy that wants his own network after this is all done?
Yes. You have to, because there's 24-hour programming about him. Think about it. Look. You cannot have an ego like Trump and just settle at a couple of things. So you can't just settle for Trump real estate. We all know about that. You can't settle for just Trump towers, and we all know about that when it comes to the backlash of these failed businesses. It's the same man who tried to buy the NFL Buffalo Bills team and failed. He has tried other things and failed when it comes to certain business properties. He has took his name as a selling point where companies would buy the name and so-called brand it and put it on airlines and things like that, and that became bust as well. So he sold his name out to get a fat check coming in. Ego-wise, what more do you want? To all praise to the orange one, to have a 24-hour network that's centered around you. It's the ultimate. I mean, he'll probably go as far as Trump media, Trump radio, Trump, you know, apps, the whole thing, because he loves that. Again, here's a president, when he's making appearances, use the words ratings. I never heard a president use the word ratings before until he came along.
I know.
You know, it's about and ownership. So, no, that would be one of the most ultimate tower of Trump, to have a 24-hour network built around him.
The thing is that when we talk about a network built around Donald Trump 24 hours a day, right now, we can already kind of see the foundations of that in what has transpired with him and Fox News. Now, of course, This week, let's just go ahead and say Donald Trump and Fox News, even though they're not an official part of his cabinet, they all took a victory lap of victory laps. But is it odd to you that Fox News would join in the relishing of the end of the Mueller investigation?
Of course they would, because what galvanizes their ratings is reporting on the president for Fox News Channel. So you can't throw the baby out in the bathwater. I mean, you could, but you do some damage to your ratings, and you don't want that. I mean, in this capacity, yes, we can use ratings in this situation, not the president. So we can use ratings, because we're talking about this whole thing with Fox News Channel. So you can't make Trump the enemy. He is the star. And plus, you have people on your network, almost like a Sean Hannity, being a Trump whisperer, who is a person who has aligned himself with Sean Hannity. So it'd just be a bad business deal to not go against the president. You have to embrace everything encompassing.
You know, I mean, as long as we're talking about everything encompassing, it seems odd this week that Fox News, as well as Donald Trump, immediately when everybody thought they were going to take the victory laps of victory laps, like they were going to run around with the Olympic torch over their head, even though the Olympics is not happening for a while. But with all of this parading that everybody anticipated, nobody kind of saw what happened right around Tuesday of this week when Fox News all of a sudden got on this bandwagon of talking about Obamacare again. And then, voila, the GOP start rolling out this plan of, we're going to end Obamacare once and for all. Now, Chris, this is something that has been Donald Trump's benchmark. This, if we have to take the administration as a benchmark type of model, one of his benchmarks is everything Obama did, Trump undoes. Why is it not that wise, though, for him to go after Obamacare?
Because you do have Republicans who need health care. I hate to tell you this. I hate to burst these people's bubbles. But not all conservatives are rich. Not all of them are damn near even a minimum wage. You do have some people out there who need health care. When people again label and put them in a box and say, you're this and you're that, that's why the country is divided. It's a classic divide and conquer move. And what he needs to realize, and I don't think he ever will, Trump and his cohorts, is the fact that the common man is the one who still is the backbone of this country. The common person, the person who pays their bills, the person who tries to do the right thing when it comes to paying your taxes and things like that. I had a conversation with a friend of mine also in radio before we got on live here. And it's a shame that people who are rich and wealthy create their own rules. And the rest of us suckers out here, you know, try to do what's right, but they create their own rules from day one. Case in point, the whole thing with the college scandal of admissions. You know, they've been putting their children through colleges and universities for years. You know, and here's other people trying to do the right thing, try to do a scholarship, whether it's athletic or athletic scholarship or a scholarship, you know, when it comes to other things as well. And you try to do what's right and you follow the rules, you know, academics and stuff like that, and then you're put to the side because someone has the cachet to put their child through a college or university. And so it's the same thing could be applied with this, because when you're dealing with control, again, people need health care. Other countries have free health care. Other countries provide health care to their citizens. How come we can't do it? Why? Because we're greedy. We're greedy bastards. We go through all these different medical companies, and we have to, you know, cut deals with them for all types of medicines and everything else, and not doing what's right, trying to keep people healthy in this country. But I don't know. It's the money line. I always say, tell people, if when in doubt, follow the money line, follow the money trail.
Well, this is just the weird thing about this particular money trail. Chris, this one, as far as what Republicans say that they're trying to do with the country, and, you know, save more and put it back into the American taxpayers' pockets and all of this stuff. As much as they say that, the estimated cost of health care is already in the United States a multi-billion dollar kind of, we float between deficit and tiny little profits because of how insurancing, payout schedules, and, of course, Medicare and Medicaid work. Chris, with all of this stuff that we know of the failing kind of the entire medical industry in America, why is it that against common sense, and I'm talking about in 2010, Republicans said there's going to be death panels, and by 2018, everybody knows that common sense says, no, there's just coverage of health care for people that are in marginal situations that would not have that coverage before. So with the attitude of the American public now conditioned to healthcare good, how do you think the GOP is going to spin this and to be like, no, everybody not having health care is better for America. Everybody going back to the insurance companies and allowing them to determine if you have pre-existing conditions, that's a good thing for America. How are they going to sell this back to us?
They have to sell it to a part of the country that has money. That's what they have to sell it to. They sell it to the people who has higher tax brackets, who are able to relate, where they can find a way to get a tax break on situations like that, as long as it benefits them. And again, it's not about you or me or anybody else. It's about money. You just mentioned before about the term common sense. It's common dollars, as far as I'm concerned. Common dollars and no sense. So we look at that perspective, again, with the money trail, people just don't care. Don't care about people with pre-conditioned situations probably dying in a few months or years, because it doesn't affect them. And when you're a person who looks at metrics and numbers, they don't see human beings. They see metrics and numbers. That's what we have become when it comes to the eyes of the people who have power and privilege. I've always said from day one, Shaggy, the ones at the power always divvies out the privileges.
Exactly. And that's just it. When it comes to the Obamacare big push by Republicans, this seems to be, and I'm just going to make this Captain Obvious moment here. This seems to me to be a war of affluence versus a war of medical common sense. Am I right or wrong here?
No, you're right about that. Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
Because, I mean, once again, trying to remember that I am a kinder, gentler Shaggy now, at least when it comes to using all of those racial epithets toward Caucasians. Even I, when I look at this situation, Chris, I'm just like, this is mind-blowing to me. This is just, it's counterintuitive behavior. And yet, we're always led to believe that, no, in the long run, this is better for all of us. But here's the thing. What if this is really about a 2011 dinner where Obama insulted Donald Trump and now he ran for president and decided to undo everything he did because he felt insulted that one night, many years ago?
Well, I have to say that if I was a betting man, that's exactly what happened. What would have happened if that dinner never took place from the standpoint of Trump not being there? I mean, really think about that. Here's a man who can go around meeting Trump, just annihilate everybody. Talk about their mamas, talk about their mamas and their sisters and brothers and everybody else, and yet feel so Teflon that nobody can say anything about him. That's a hell of an ego to sit back and say, I could stomp on you, but don't stomp on me back. So with the exchange at the, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, they've always had that, jabbing at the press and jabbing at people. That's what they did until going back to Trump, is very thin, orange-skinned person. He can't take it. He's the classic bully. So I believe, just like you, based on that one event, that he was put on the spot and made the butt of jokes, just like that, he wasn't running for the presidency. The whole birther movement, going after Obama, the whole thing. That was galvanized by that one night.
And this is the thing. As long as we're talking about galvanizing, when we talk about Donald Trump's personality at all, we do have to bring up the fact that thin orange skin of his doesn't just extend to his feelings towards Obama. It's Obama's supporters. So when it comes to repealing Obamacare, Chris, is this really about punishing the people that love Obama to this day?
Yes. The only way he would probably get it, and this is just a stretch, if people who are registered Republicans with preconditioned, situations of health, go to him or go to a press conference and say, if you do this, you're going to affect us too. And Mr. President, we voted for you. That, I don't think would help, but I think would send a very strong message. The fact that you're going to dismantle something that affects everybody, not these Obamaites that you call them at times, so I've heard people say that, or people who support Obama. It's not about that. It's about people in this country who need help when it comes to medicine. Nothing wrong with that, but you want to make it about yourself, obviously, because I'm sorry, the world revolves around you. We're just peons, living, in your world, but you can't separate the fact that people need assistance when it comes to medical care. I think that press conference might help with other Republicans who don't see eye to eye with Trump, and you might have certain people who just might break the allegiance and come forward independently and say, you know what, these people are right.
Yeah. Because when it comes to this story, I mean, at the end of the day, this is the thing that is really kind of worrying me. They're all repeal, repeal, repeal. But what's their replacement plan?
None. Nothing in place whatsoever. I can understand if you had another plan involved, but they have nothing. They just they get off on the action itself of repealing Obamacare, but then it's replace it with, and that's dangerous.
It really is. Because, I mean, if you're thinking about, like, what was it, 2.5 million Americans that get their care from the Affordable Care Act, which, by the way, right. Obamacare was actually, and I'm going to say this not in a whisper like I usually do, Obamacare, the name was tongue-in-cheek racism from the GOP trying to label it something they thought people would hate because, once again, he was black.
Yes. Yeah, that was a move to have people be frightened, run for your life, run to the hills, because here comes a scary black man.
Yeah, but what instead it is actually called is the Affordable Care Act. And before Republicans messed with it before that, it was called the Affordable Care Act and Patient Protection Agreement, which was supposed to give patients like me and you a bill of rights that would have helped save millions in the healthcare industry. Yikes, Chris. Are we really about to go off the cliff with no healthcare?
You know what? I hope not. But and we keep it real on your program, it doesn't look good.
No.
That's the thing about it. It doesn't look good at all. I think it's going to happen. I know people, obviously, like you do, who benefit from those type of acts of getting affordable healthcare, and now it's in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And I hope that the Republicans and conservatives on the GOP will all be proud of themselves. If there's a feather in your cap, go right ahead. You must be very, very proud.
Yeah. Thanks for screwing us all. We'll be right back. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
This is Scientific American's 60 Second Science. I'm Christopher Intagliata. One of the ugliest sights in Great Britain is a small power station outside Plymouth, England, its electrical lines and towers surrounded by a drab-colored fence. I know this not because I've been there, but because a photo of it has scored a measly 1 out of 10 on an online game called Scenic or Not. The game has viewers rate photos from all over the UK on their scenic beauty. After 1.5 million ratings of more than 200,000 photos, the site has classified more than 93% of Great Britain as scenic or not, or somewhere in between. And now a study in the journal Scientific Reports has used that data to show that our happiness increases in line with the scenic beauty around us, which might sound kind of obvious.
But what was, I think, surprising is that we're finding that connection in built-up areas as well. So it's not just a natural area that might have an impact on our happiness, but we might also feel happier in more beautiful areas in our cities.
Chinooki Saracena, a data scientist at the Warwick Business School and the Alan Turing Institute. Saracena and her team used data from the Mappiness iPhone app, which polled some 15,000 participants about their well-being a few times a day over a 3-year period. The app also pulled GPS data, which allowed Saracena and her team to correlate happiness ratings with the scenic or not rating of where a participant happened to be. The team found that as scenic beauty goes up, so does self-reported well-being, and that held true for areas featuring picturesque human-built structures, such as bridges and interesting architecture. And though it's just a correlation for now,
I think what's the interesting thing about this research is that it shows that just a small introduction of beauty into an area in a city can actually create happiness for possibly, you know, thousands of people that are being exposed to that.
Which could come in handy, because the global population is forecast to grow to 11 billion by the end of the century, living mostly in cities, which should be built as appealing as possible. Thanks for listening. For Scientific American's 60 Second Science, I'm Christopher Intagliata.
News from the left and the right.
From the guy a bit off center
and slightly out of his mind. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back. Where the heck have you been? We've just been sitting here having a glorious time, and if you missed any of it, you should go check us out at our website, shaggyjenkins.com, or wherever fine social media is served, at Shaggy Live. You can also subscribe to this show on services like iTunes and Spotify. Just go there and search for the Shaggy Jenkins Show. guy, I would be that guy that I just mentioned about half a dozen times there. A critical thinker, host of this program, and also happy to be joined by one of a good fellow broadcasters who spent time not only in talk radio, but music radio, and really just in the whole trenches of what it's like to research stories. Please welcome Information Headquarters himself from the Windy City. It's Chris Bass.
Oh, man. Thank you, Shaggy. Always good to be with you, man, and continue to make it rock and roll.
Okay. Because let's talk about rocking and rolling, shall we? This is the thing. As of late, the Democratic field has been, and I want to just throw this word in there, a bit crowded. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. What are you talking about, like 15, 16 candidates right now?
Yeah, they're practically their own baseball team with a second string.
Yeah, I agree.
But this is the thing. One Democrat has kind of risen from the ranks of obscurity, and I don't want to be one of those guys that says something that's taken way out of context, but the last time a low-key candidate in a crowded field of politicians started to make more and more sense, right around the time that Obama ran for his first term, I want to bring into this conversation a guy by the name of Pete Buttigieg. What do we know about him?
Well, tell you the truth, not much. I mean, he's one of those campaign situations where you look at his campaign, I think he's going by the everyman type of situation. I think that he's also trying to be more of a people's candidate, not a traditional, staunch, higher-up Democratic candidate. And he had no choice because in the field of what he's into, he's relatively unknown. And, you know, this is the time to make a name for yourself and get the ground running. So I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'm not familiar with guys, just by seeing him on a couple of talking head interviews here and there. Openly gay. This is an openly gay one, I assume, right?
Yeah.
Right. And that would get you further from the standpoint of that's, we've never seen anybody like this before from that particular standpoint. But again, you know, it's a get to know you. This is a get to know you time for the candidates and for potential voters. And that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, again, I've seen him on Talking Head programs. I haven't seen anything that really popped out until recently. And that's where the story comes into play.
Yeah. And this story that we're talking about is just one. And in a long string of Pete making himself kind of, hi, my name's Pete. No. Not too long ago, before we talk about what he's recently said, Chris, he said some pretty critical things. Because at one time, he served under Mike Pence in the state of Indiana. And one of the most eye-opening things that he said in a forum where they just thought, hey, with people like Tulsi Gabbard and Beto O'Rourke around, nobody's going to notice little Pete Buttigieg. But this is the thing about him. In that town hall, he said something amazingly profound. It was about Mike Pence and the public character aspect of the office of vice presidency. And just to paraphrase here, because I'm not going to say it the way he did it, but in a very stripped down style, he said, hey, how is it that this guy can claim to be the forefront of, you know, Christian practices, yet he kind of worships his boss, not the guy that he says he worships. So I'm a little confused here. In a nutshell, that's all he said. And people were like, pow, mind-blowing. Oh, my God, this is so astoundingly profound of a thing for this guy to observe. Why is it that a little moment like that kind of galvanized people behind him?
Well, because of Pence, him, I was just said before, working for Pence at one point, and to go against him. Because you have Trump and Pence, of course, being president and vice president, I think that when you help galvanize the fact that I don't subscribe to what Pence is doing or has done, that gives you points automatically. People start to take a look at you differently because whatever you're doing, you're off the bat, off the races because any people are doing, they're anti-Trump or not with Trump's philosophy of him being president in the White House administration. So when you take the opposite stance, and then when you that's the obvious. All these people are running because they're not part of the GOP or Republicans. But when you actually say it and it comes out there for people to hear, that goes a long way, too.
Yeah. Well, I kind of want to, this is going to sound weird, but I'm going to bring in a little prison yard logic to this whole scenario. Shall I?
No, you shall.
Okay. Here's the thing, people. Prison life has been portrayed as a little hard over the years, and one of the things that's kind of been portrayed in stereotypical prison yard behavior is, what do you do when you're the new guy on the block? Now, for most people, when you're thinking like, oh man, I'm going to be a G, I'm going to be gangster and Al Capone-ish or 50 Cent, choose your gangster wisely, that's all I'm saying. But when you talk about that type of behavior, you're like, okay, first thing I'm going to do when I hit the yard, I'm going to find the biggest dude and I'm going to knock him out. So that way everybody knows I am the toughest, strongest guy here. But let me go down to the street mentality and tell you, that's not how you really think. See, the wise man, they're going to come in there and they're going to pop the number two guy. Because when you pop the number two guy, you give the number one guy pause. If you just hit number one guy, everybody just reacts. But if you pop number two, number one is going to have himself a thinking moment with everybody to decide where you fit on the field. Is Pete Buttigieg using that type of strategy?
That's a good analogy, Shaggy. I would say so. That's very methodical. For him to do, because, yeah, like you said before, you go after number one, that's like shock value. But if you methodically go after two to put fear into number one, then that's more of a process that he wants to do. It's like, okay, I knocked on number two. Number two is down for the count. I'm coming after you, number one. That's sweet. I mean, that's a good philosophy to have because, again, he puts something on number one's mind of how Pete's coming after him. So I agree with that. That's a good philosophy. I like that. It's a good analogy.
It kind of seems that that's what he did, though, because when he took his swipe at Mike Pence, this wasn't just a little, you know, kitty peck to the chin. He threw a haymaker and questioned one of the core values of Mike Pence's public persona, his Christian faith. Is that safe, though?
You have to be careful at times because, you know, when you make a move like that, are you going to offend the Christian left? So you always heard about the Christian right, but there's a Christian left too. You know, people, I mean, come on now, it's common sense. I mean, it was common right, what have it, but you got to think about it. If there are people who are conservative, who are Christians, there got to be people on the left who are thinking the same way or different, I should say, who are also Christians. So you don't want to offend that part as well. So you got to be very, very careful. I think also with the strategy that's involved, the one thing that I don't want to see, because this bringing out all these different candidates is parallel to Republicans back in 2016, going for the presidency with then candidate Trump and the others in that large field of candidates, you know. And so I don't want the Democrats to go after each other from the standpoint of name calling and trying to call people out. I hope they don't. But if they do, it's policies as usual.
You know, can I just say that I don't think Pete's the one that we need to mess with, because in his latest statements, he proved that he will take a swipe at his very own party for what he saw as the mistakes that they made during the 2016 campaign. Now, I referenced this a little earlier, but here's the thing. Pundits, politicians, and just people, I've been looking at a lot of his comments lately, and one comment that he brought up in an interview with CNN kind of hit people square between the eyes. It is that, look, we are going to lose, we being Democrats, we are going to lose in 2020 if we don't get on to having our own agenda. Everyone's agenda and Hillary Clinton's primary political tool and biggest political mistake is going after Trump as the villain. They're not offering an alternative. This is just like the GOP and Obamacare when you think about it, right?
There is, but see, my take on the whole thing with Hillary was different. Hillary came off as far as I was concerned, a sense of entitlement when it came to running for the presidency because of what she went through with her husband. Let's remember, let's go back in time, let's go back in the time when Bill was running for the presidency and the affair he had with then Jennifer Flowers. And so then, of course, he went 60 minutes to clean everything up. She played the Tammy Wynette, I'll stand by your man situation, which she did. And then I noticed that after that, Hillary Clinton became Hillary Rodham Clinton. She made sure that her family's name was in the books if this was going to be pulled off with her husband coming the next president. So now it's historical content. So we've seen her in other fractions, being first lady, being a senator from New York at one point, being secretary of state during the Obama administration. So again, we've seen her different fractions. There was a sense of entitlement, far as I was concerned, for her running. Now, don't get me wrong. Anybody to go up against Trump during that time already has my vote. I'm sorry, Trump was just not the candidate that I saw to lead us into the future. But with Hillary, there was times of, well, this is my time. I deserve it and everything else. And once again, she could be right. I felt that, like, for example, now, I'll just get off that real quick and go to what's happening now. They said about her running now. No, she shouldn't run now. She had her time. You know, let new voices, new people come to the fray. Because here's the thing I thought about. If she was getting elected by then as Madam President, historical content, I get all that. But she would have had the Democratic Party in the palm of her hand. Why? Because the Democratic Party in that time was financially bleeding. And she came along and saved it, paying and dishing out $3 million per month to the DNC. So she had them right there by the short and curlies. And now you're president? It would have been too much.
Yeah. But the thing about that whole scenario is that a lot of people now, when they think of like a Hillary running again, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, yeah, maybe your time has passed, but look, no more in American history has privilege and affluence been on trial and under the public spotlight as much as this year. Would you agree?
I agree.
So with that being said, I mean, if you want to talk about somebody that would come out and just exude all of the classist privilege type behavior that we do not want to see in society, it would be a Hillary, wouldn't it?
I agree. Absolutely.
So, you know, the thing is when Pete Buttigieg comes out and he does all of these little, and it seems like just surgical precision comments like this, Chris, bringing this story back to him, is this somebody that other Democrats, not just Hillary, should be worried about?
They should be to a degree, because it's like going against the throne or telling family secrets when it comes to the Democratic Party. Same thing, and I hate to say it, same thing Trump did when he was running for the presidency, when he went after Jeb Bush. The fact he eviscerated Jeb Bush, because I never forget, I was watching the Republican presidential debate on CBS, and here goes Trump going after not Jeb Bush, but his brother, George W., about the whole thing with the 911, that they didn't find anything, mass destruction of weapons in Iran and and Afghanistan and everything else. But there was a gasp in the crowd because, like, oh, he's going after Bush. And he did. Because he had to knock him down, lay him to waste for him to emerge. So sometimes, and look at what Pete's doing, I think being a part of a party does not mean you're party blind. That you are a part of this organization, but you see problems with it. And to me, and once again, a parallel, because I don't think 45 is that smart. I give Pete the smarts in this one. I think he's just brutally honest. And when you're brutally honest, you know, people can't take it sometimes.
No. Speaking of things that people can't take, because, you know, the problem with this story is that we could literally debate the Democratic field ad nauseum. And quite frankly, I don't want to depress anybody. So let's talk about the happy story of Jussie Smollett.
Chris. Oh, okay. That's swell.
Yeah. It's a happy, sunny, just normal everyday story of possibly staged racist attacks and payoffs to Nigerians and You know, I mean, internet is weird, y'all, but not so weird that Smollett this week found himself in almost an ex-file-ish type situation where, oh, the chief of police in Chicago came out and said, bad, 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 Smollett, and all of a sudden, all charges drop and he's freed. Chris, what gives?
Well, we've seen the press conferences. We've seen Jussie Smollett come out with his lawyer team and come to find out that all the charges were dropped. All 16 counts were dropped. The case is sealed. That means that we cannot find out what exactly went down. It could be unsealed. They did it with Bill Cosby, so it's not like it can't be unsealed, but right now it is sealed. And he walks, you know, free. He got his monopoly, you know, get out of jail card for free, and he's, you know, he's flying like a boy. But what happened? And so the question becomes, what happened to details of this? So he forfeits the bond money, which was $10,000. Some people say a little bit more than that. And his community time, which was Operation Push here in Chicago, that was funded by Jesse Jackson. That's his community time, or he did it already. And then that was pretty much it. That's pretty much a nutshell of the whole thing. But the man still lied as of January 29th. Because, again, the story is still full of holes. And how can he walk like that? And the thing about the false outrage of Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson, the reason why they were upset, because they got caught with their pants down. You know, they were making the national runs on Good Morning America and other national talking head shows, denouncing Jussie Smollett, and now they got egg on their face, and how could this happen? The other caveat is that Cook County State's Attorney here, Kimberly Fox, recused herself from the case, come to find out that she spoke to a Smollett relative during this whole thing. Now, okay, your state's attorney, why in all types of hell would you do that during the case, knowing you're a part of it, knowing you have to be a part of the justice supposed to be served during this time? No, you call or have a contact with the relative of the person you're probably going to indict and saying you're going to be all right. Of course you recuse yourself, but why the recusal? So right now, currently, in the state's attorney's office, she's getting bombarded with questions. She did an interview locally here on ABC 7. I don't think it would save her. I think the question would keep on coming, because why in your position put yourself out there to not only be recused, but make a silly mistake in talking to the relative of Jussie Smollett during this time?
I don't know. And the thing is that the more you look into this case, the more you're trying to figure out, is this the real world or is this an episode of Empire? Did Cookie set all of this up? I mean, it's strange, because immediately when he comes out, he once again decries victimhood, and at the same time of decrying victimhood, the records get sealed, and everybody's going like a steel trap, except they're not. Because according to Mrs. Fox, who was the prosecuting attorney, quote, he's not innocent. What do you make of that statement?
That means he lied. That no, he's not innocent. I think it goes back to the original premise, which I believe that Superintendent Eddie Johnson was onto something about the fact that he used the media, that he used the man hours for investigation because of a petty situation of his salary and everything on Empire. I believe that. But the thing about it is, going back to the deal that was cut, for example, 12 detectives were hired for this case, let alone the other man and woman hours put upon it. 12 detectives, that's a lot of money up front. And then he got to go with the other foot soldiers trying to find out about these guys wearing MAGA caps and lynching people and pouring bleach on people. Got to investigate that too. So it was all for naught. Someone told me, Shaggy, any press is good press. And I believe that's right, but at what cost that we're looking at? And also, I heard rumor that part of the deal that was cut was to help pay for the man hours that was lost during this time.
Now, it's kind of fishy when you bring that up, because right after the not guilty, all charges dropped kind of thing happened, immediately Fox and producers of Empire came out and said that they fully backed Smollett. Not too long ago, they fully backed out of Smollett. So,
Right. You
think that this was all a part of a way of getting himself back on track in life? Like, this was one of those blonde moments in the life of Jussie?
Well, it's possible. I mean, who's to say that they won't kiss and make up, me and Smollett, Lee Daniels, and the people over there at Fox's Empire? You know, people come back from the dead all the time. I mean, if his character's dead, they always bring him back. I mean, it's a soap opera, for God's sake. I mean, everybody comes back from the dead. You wouldn't be a good character if your character was not killed and came back from the dead. I mean, that's part of the routine. So that could always happen. But Fox's Empire ratings were not good prior to this. There was, it's been documented. You go to like HollywoodReporter.com, and they had articles about this prior to Smollett's situation, that their ratings were kind of in the toilet, that it was taking a decrease in ratings. When this happened, here comes the spike. People who even weren't even Empire followers followed it because of the whole case. So in a roundabout way, the whole thing about old press and new press and, you know, bad press, good press, Empire benefited from it, whether they want to admit it or not.
So I hate to say it, but at the end of the day, the plan worked.
Yes. And who's to say that Fox execs didn't come forward to help flip the bill for this forfeit of money and probably add on some more to sweeten the deal?
You know, I know this week that I had talked a little bit about corruption anxiety and how it's this belief, this overriding belief that we, as people, always believe in corruption existing everywhere. But when it comes to the world of TV ratings and how highly competitive they are, especially now that streaming services are winning Emmys and stuff, with all of this competitiveness, Chris, I hate to say it, but it's the first time I'm ever going to say it on this show. I kind of buy the conspiracy. Do I need a tin hat?
You can borrow mine.
Cool. Okay, one more story before we get out of here. And this one's kind of huge because this guy, not too long ago, was known as Gropey Old Uncle Joe. But Gropey Old Uncle Joe, in light of the Me Too movement and the fact that he also came out this week and said, you know, all that stuff that I did to Anita Hill, feel kind of bad for that. This is the question I have for you. Chris, he hasn't really announced yet, but is Joe Biden kind of already looking at VP picks?
Yeah, yes, he is. I mean, I said it before, my dream pick on the ticket would have been Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. That would have been my pick for going into 2020. But he's looking at Georgia Democrat Stacey Adams, who I think is another solid pick. The one thing that Joe is up against, like you said before about Anita Hill, and because his committee has spearheaded that during that time, has to go back and apologize. And I agree, he has to apologize profusely because that whole debacle that happened, if you ever go back and see it, thank God for YouTube, and, you know, you have some time to kill, watch it, the whole Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill hearings. And I have to say, you know, it was sad to go through all that because, you know, a lot of stuff was true. I don't think that a woman would get up there and lie in her situation in that time because she was a professor at a prestigious college, you know, had all that on the line. And why you want to lie to get rid of a cushy job at a university or college? I know I wouldn't, you wouldn't, most people would not. So integrity was during that time. And he has to apologize for that. And again, these politicians have to apologize for a lot of things in order to keep it moving forward. So don't be surprised if this comes up again and he has a public statement and everything else. But if he is seriously running, because I'll put my money behind Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden is a great candidate to galvanize and move the Democratic Party forward for what we need to see. I think Stacey Abrams is the future of what we see in the Democratic Party as well. So, yeah, I would think that if you fuse the two together from president to vice president candidates, you might have a winning formula there.
Yeah. I'm always wondering if, because, you know, Joe's kind of a quirky character. Remember the time somebody gave him the keys to their 65 Corvette and he goes, oh, I'd love to take this for a little spin. They get in the car and he slams the gas and goes sideways with it.
Yeah.
This is kind of one of those moments where I'm wondering if in an old Uncle Joe's head, if he didn't pick Stacey Abrams just so they could have the initials BA and he could walk around telling everybody, we're badass.
Well, you know, if he did, he's right there with Beto O'Rourke, using a slang language like that to talk to the people. So watch you be any different.
Now, I mean, oh, wow, I didn't realize that we were this close to the end of the show. But 20 seconds here, real quick. Chris, what makes Stacy almost more exciting than Joe?
I think Stacy represents the future. She had a very close race to become governor of Georgia. People have not forgotten that. And I think that if this was to happen, it would be more than sufficient for her to be a new leader in the Party of Democrats.
Yeah. And that's the time that all we have for this week. Make sure you look up Chris Base at Chris, B-A-S-E, 1 online, and me, well, you know my website. Till next time.